Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the seventh podcast in this series. Today's date is February 5th, 2020. The theme of the podcast is developing the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage as the most popular television show ever, based on the moving format of a long-distance peace walk from place to place around the world, with popular personalities coming to lend their draw to the show with cameo appearances and the use of various peace tools that become the self-sponsoring products that sponsor the show by virtue of people ordering these products and wanting to use them to conduct local peace walks to promote the messages associated. One of the kinds of products is I call a peace livery. Livery stables means things that horses need to live, but human livery is all the things a person needs to live. Imagine a military backpack and all the kits that they get when they go in the military, but designed for a peace walk. Simple clothing, kit bags for this and that, and a tenting system, a modular tenting system that I've designed since 1983. It came together based on the tetrahedral geometry. Tetrahedron meaning four sides, four triangular sides. This is the shape water bonds in and carbon bonds in this shape. So as a chemist, I've been fascinated with the tetrahedron as the basic shape of our life form. The simplest platonic solid is a tetrahedron. So when you put six of these together in a circle, six poles tied in a corner makes a tetrahedron. When you put them together like that, six of them, and tie them a slightly different way, it makes a big tent, times as big as with more space. So if the peace walkers each have a tetrahedral tent, say an 8-foot scale, big enough to live in and do something and sleep and cook and all of your bathing or you in a peace walk lifestyle. But if you, so each night, six people can put theirs together in a different way and have a common space to share, to learn from, and the experience. So the idea is 100 walkers representing 30 different cultures and languages around the world in a week, that with the socialization process of human hive tenting system, they would also already be acquainted, and with the vibe that this shape imparts to the people, it's a very unusual kind of environment. It gives a common experience, common socialization experience, sharing the tetrahedron alone and the six unit module together. And some other products would be these kit bags, and some free toys like the peace braids, rainbow peace braids, six rounds of rainbow colors, paired in three pairs, braided together, 1 fathom long as far as you can reach, and a knot in the center, a figure eight knot, and the braided out to the end with another figure eight knot. That's the rainbow piece braid. It stands for the, you make it with love. It stands for the message of peace. And when everyone has one, we'll have world peace. That's the kind of teaching and intent to popularize all around the world this message. And other things like the red cloth dyeing ceremony, people use take some white cloth, have a ceremony, dye it red, and use that cloth like the man of the cloth, woman of the cloth, to sense for something sacred that you take on that has to do with the fulfillment of the Hopi life plan prophecy about the coming of paradise on earth after we overcome the problems of today, which we can only do from a higher level of consciousness, which is what the Rainbow Uprising campaign is about, to uprise consciousness to the higher level to see the solutions to today's problem. That was a campaign in 1990 that Hopi interpreter Thomas Binyaka participated all week, along with Mohawk Chief Jake Swamp, the Tree of Peace Society, and the Chumash Elders. A week of events. It's on video. It's on YouTube, called the Rainbow Uprising Campaign of Rainbow Uprising of Consciousness Campaign on YouTube. It's a 2-hour edit of 20 hours video. It includes over a half hour of actor John Voight at the Peace Flame on campus talking about the Native messages and elders he knows. After I walked from the peace tree where Jake Swamp delivered the message of the peacemaker and the great love of peace. So I don't want to, I'm going to cut short my ramble about the concept of the great planetary peace pilgrimage as the way to promote the messages of peace. They're represented by the six symbols on the global peace pole for Jerusalem. It started several years ago with the Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, and then adding the symbol of the great law of peace, adding the symbol of Hopi Declaration of Peace, the symbol of the unity of all the three religions of Jerusalem in peace. That symbol was put on by my mayor, Kathy Murillo, at the Tree of Peace ceremony on March 11, 2018. Then the Sai Baba symbol of spiritual unity of all religions. And then the last one from Jose Munoz, the Mayan calendar keeper, one of the five new archetype symbols employed with the next 26,000 year calendar that started December 21st, 2012. This is a symbol for peace, love, and patience. And that from that six sun calendar, many teachings have emerged, including the one he delivered in 2015 at the Antioch University in Santa Barbara. He said for the very first time, he's telling this story that his elders told him to share publicly for their first time, because the crystal skull he had, all of a sudden a spot of red appeared in the middle of the crystal skull. They thought it looked like blood. But the teaching was to to relay the message of the Jade Princess, which had 8 feet of double-sided, double-width Xerox copies, like rubbing from stone carvings, those Mayan faces and that. But he said the main message is, this was delivered on June 21st in the year 1444, where the Jade Princess said she was talking a message from the year 2029, and the world peace began on Earth in the year 2021. So the last, since that time, Jose talked about this in the 2015. There was all these years between various ceremonies to build up that energy. And in Santa Barbara, I was focused in the homeless camp and developing the peace pole for Jerusalem with the six symbols. And then on October that I just described, and on October 2nd, we installed the seventh symbol, which is a symbol, my tetron thesis, my tetron natural unified field theory about the nature of light and the human mind's consciousness orientation function of light, symbolized by this tetron symbol, which is looks like a circle with a triangle and an empty circle inside the triangle with a dot, and it represents a three-dimensional figure of a sphere with a tetrahedron inside and a dot in the middle. It's to help understand and utilize the power of the human mind and how consciousness is orientated based on the overlooked property of the nature of light, the CE and E equals MC squared. That C squared means more than the speed of light squared, means the velocity of light oriented to the relative identity of the observer squared, but that part's been left off. And so that people aren't paying attention, if they were, that would totally reconcile with all kinds of philosophies that say each person is the center of their own universe, because in scientifically, it's because light is non-additive, means each person is the peg, each person is, the identity is pegged to the nature of light. And so it's an indication of the egocentric nature of reality, which we all know as children, everything in the world revolves around me kind of thing. But the children have to be acclimated to put that aside and forget about it. And then all kinds of problems come about because we don't face that part of the great love peace, which I think is the symbol of inviolable sovereign law, the law of nature, the law of God, the Torah, the will of God in Islam, so forth and so on, the myoho, the wonderful law, and the namu myoho rengekyo. That mantra is the essence of the Buddhist teaching to bring peace in our time, but by its pronunciation. Boy, I thought another attempt to do a few minute introduction to the principles behind the concepts to promote with the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage. I want to go into some other things. the theme for these podcasts from the last one, the sixth one to the seventh one today, for a total of eight more before the 1st of April, is the theme of telling the truth, even if it makes you look like a fool. That's because one of the stories about where April Fool's Day came was that's supposed to be the day that people tell each other the truth, but that's so rare of a way to think that a lot of times people make a fool of themselves by doing it. So that's why they call it April Fool's Day. So I'm taking that as a theme for this and the next, the seven more podcasts before April 1st, to explain the best I can, and then my two-hour podcast and the post to Facebook and whatever in between, the various truths I'm aware of, and what I believe is true, and explain the basis of why I believe it's true. Maybe it's radical, but I believe it's true, and I'm going to explain the basis so people can evaluate. But I'm going to try to muster up the courage and inspire people on this idea to tell the truth, even if it you seems like you make a fool of yourself. So I'm going to digress a little bit from the piece. I'll say this first. I was having a conversation with my son Micah on the way back from Lompoc yesterday. I'm calling in from Goleta today, and he was asking me, "Well, what do you envision the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage? Why will people want to watch it? What it will be?" So I was trying to share with him, like the fact that my dad, when I was a boy, worked at Walt Disney Studios, and he, for the first half of his career, and then was at Disney's, and the next half was at Universal as an accountant. And when he was at Disney, he told over the dinner table what was coming, what Disney was doing. And when it came time, he was explaining what they were going to do with the Mickey Mouse Club. None of us could understand what he was talking about, because the format didn't exist. They didn't have something that us kids could relate to. What the hell he was talking about? Well, when we saw it and became accustomed to the format of the show, we realized it's a kind of a variety show and a lot of mixture of things, kinds of gags and presentations, songs and animation even, but basically the concept of a free form variety show. So I tell Todd to explain that in terms of the Great Planetary Peace Pilgrimage vision, because originally I thought of it as a true life adventure, but these days they call it a reality TV show. But in my vision, if you imagine, I told him a half-hour show, how many minutes would be this and that and the other. certain few minutes would be every week. The walking scene, things that happen on a walk, the visual, maybe interactions between the walkers, boy meets girl, ongoing stories kind of thing. Then the few minutes of the stage presentations at night from the popular personalities, singing, skits, jokes, whatever, scenes from the kitchen with the international cuisine, how do people like the food? That can be whole spinoff of food shows. And how then the scenes inside the tents, how people learn the practice of peace and that kind of thing. So even science fiction elements where somebody's invented an anti-gravity device or a time travel device and shows up at key points, part fantasy, part science fiction, part reality, or maybe leading to reality. And that leads me to some of the other things I've mentioned before to tell the truth about. Like, I'm aware from my science work from the 1970s of the technologies to replace nuclear and fossil fuel power. Initially, they were just ideas, and that since then, they've been fleshed out by countless scientists doing experiments that have proven these kinds of technologies, but the government won't let it happen because these technologies are restricted under government secrecy orders, dual use is called. If an inventor turns in a patent application and the patent has military applications as well as a civilian, the end is ordered secret and confiscated, and the inventor can't talk about it under this dual-use secrecy agreements. I'm aware of that documentation for the 1980s. Back then, it was over 4,000 patents confiscated like that to the patent office, and the inventors threatened with the jail if they talk about them. And in spite of that, people like Bruce De Palma has done amazing experiments verifying a number of key principles and anomalous effects of rotation on physical objects, rotation and precession. Starting with the question of Galileo, his experiment dropping the big rock and the small rock off the Tower of Pisa, and they fell at the same rate, one of De Palma's students asked him, well, if you spin the object, will it change the rate of fall? And they looked in all the literature, couldn't find the experiment done, so they prepared the experiment using a strobe light, pair the relative trajectories of a ball bearing with spinning and non-spinning, and he found, photographically he proved, the spin changed the gravitational behavior. The spinning object goes higher with the same thrust and falls faster and hits the ground first. Completely blows science away. He got a black and white photograph and a color page in a Princeton magazine back then in the late 60s and went to the famous physicist John Wheeler to ask him to how to explain this. And he did a stationary drop from 6 feet where you could see the small here, the small, but audio, you could hear the difference where the spinning object fell faster. You know, small difference, but blew John Wheeler away, Bruce, as he went ashen and took a couple of puffs in his cigar and wrote it off saying, "I'm not sure my eyes are capable of telling the difference." With that, he brushed it off, this major thing, because it did not fit with any theory he knew, which he was the leading theoretical physicist in the world at the time. Since then, John Wheeler has died, but his mind was influenced because he was collaborating with Paramahansa Tewari on the development of Bruce's end machine in India, which is proven out as called an over-unity homopolar generator that spins. And Michael Faraday discovered the principle of the homopolar generator. But he never figured out, like Bruce did eventually, that you could get more electricity out than the motor, a homopolar motor. Well, the long and short of it, after many years of the league trying to get UCSB to pay attention to this, they developed this generator for ship propulsion and satellite electricity, especially the early rail guns, because it has high current. And I don't want to get too technical in this part, but if you look at the website, Bruce D. Palma, DEPalma.com, you'll see all the documentation about his rotation experiment. Almost a decade, he did all experiments on rotation, completely blew my mind. Rotating precession instrument that weighed 300 pounds, lost weight. Means a anti-gravity potential. He has a space drive where he created and put in a little red wagon, and he rode himself around the room pushing on space itself by alternating precession with rotation and precession without rotation on moving an object where it gripped on space. So this is a device called the Space Drive that Richard Hoagland and recent radio says he's the one that brought it to the United Nations in 1992, this concept of Bruce De Palma's inventions. But he wants to get people to duplicate these experiments because it has implications for space drive. But Edgar Mitchell, astronaut, CIA contact, discouraged Bruce, said he was under a death threat from the CIA, that why Bruce left town to New Zealand, Australia, and then New Zealand. I talked to Edgar Mitchell after. It's a misunderstanding. I wasn't threatening him, but it's just warning him kind of thing. Well, that's a big deal. You have to realize it's connected to UCSB physics. They poo-pooed, quoted and misquoted everything wrong. And the same time, Bruce got an anonymous call from a guy one time saying, he was an old guy, a physicist. He said, "Do you know they're working on your generator in secret at UCSB?" And they talked a little bit and he hung up. But many projects are secret, university projects too. They use public funding to create devices that are not shared with the public under secrecy agreements. That's what Bruce talked about in our Rainbow Uprising campaign panel. So in 1990, so we have to investigate these kind of things. And another inventor I want to mention is Thomas Bearden. He was associated with the Association for Distinguished American Scientists. He gave me a grant in 1998 to get my computer able to go on the internet, because I was the one who brought to the Department of Energy my testimony about Bruce's device, and my colleague William Thomas in D.C. was able to speak at the last hearing and provoke the head of the Department of Energy to get a letter, which is on our website, his website, verifying the existence of this, the Casimir effect was verified in an experiment, which means the zero point energy is real and a source of energy, but that can be liberated by electric power technologies. And the comment I gave to the Department of Energy was put in their report, saying that Bruce De Palma's end machine is one device may be able to harness this zero-point energy. And it gave the Hal Puthoff, the main theoretical physics guy behind it, he's the guy with Targ, Russell Targ, that at Stanford Research investigated Uri Geller's spoon bending and psychic phenomena in the 70s. And I got a 1973 article publishing that Uri Geller's talents are real. That I'm amazed that science can't face it. Similarly to Sai Baba's manifesting things from thin air, they can't deal with that either. But Targ and Puthoff had that research. So what I'm leading up to is Thomas Bearden's website. Thomas Bearden was the head of the Army Advanced Electromagnetic Warfare Department. And he learned a bunch of stuff, and he left that position, lieutenant colonel, began his own research, dug into all the electrical equations, found out that the Maxwell equations that we use in physics and electricity now are compromised, rounded off from the original two versions of the original, with one with quaternion forms, meaning four equations, four unknowns, rounded off to the next level, rounded up to what we have today. But the original form talks about scalar energy, all these, what stuff was secreted by the government because of those weapons applications. So anyway, Thomas Bearden figured it all out. And he, in the, his late lifetime, more than 10 years ago, I'd say, he actually got patented a device he calls the motionless electromagnetic generator. And it's available. You can see the design, the patent, everything. Means free electricity, solid state, no fuel, produces electricity. You can run your car on it. You can run your power plant on it. Thing you can, you don't need nuclear power to boil water, to turn a steam engine, to make electricity. You have a solid state device that's patented, that's available. You just have to look it up and implement it over the resistance of the economic powers of today that have chopped this off since Nikola Tesla 100 years ago made a free energy power plant called Wardenclyffe and was going to broadcast free electricity wirelessly around the planet until Morgan, J.P. Morgan, Scuttlib, the economic powers that be want to maintain the oil monopoly, the profits, and plus oil, what they make pharmaceuticals from, make a lot of money on that. Totally screwed up medicines and everything. But you want to check out Thomas Bearden's website and dig into it. I'll spell it, but it's the name of the town where he grew up. It's CHENIRE.org. Chenery. CHENIRE.org. Thomas Bearden. He's the most he's dead now, so they can't do anything. He's patented. His people have tons of books, tons of resources for anybody. Any level of physics can get his books and understand this stuff, and it's available, but you have to dig for it. And I'm telling you, this is definitely one of the things. If you talk about it, think people are going to think you're nuts. Not only a fool, how can you have free electricity, blah, blah, blah. It's happening. It's done deal. There's other vendors that have done similar things. Adam Trombley with the ProjectEarth.com. He developed a solid state, and the government took it away and chained him to the fence, him and his partner to the fence, until he took all his keys. He's still around, but he's can't do it. He's gagged about this. He worked with De Palma early on, Trombley and Tiwari, the Baba devotee from India, who duplicated the work of De Palma in India. Completely different theory he had about how reality works, the space vortex theory, he called it. But he said, De Palma's machine works or verifies my theory. Then he got the information. He was the head of the nuclear power board in India. He built the machine. It worked. He says it proves his theory. I tried to get him and Brian O'Leary, the former Mars astronaut, together, who knows Sai Baba also, together with Tiwari and the then president of India to develop this technology, because they're all Baba devotees, but it fell through at the last minute because a bunch of when he went to India, it was when the Challenger thing blew up and it derailed his trip somehow, and I didn't get to put that together. But check out BruceDePalma.com and Chianeri.org to start with him. If you have any doubt, check it out. You'll be solved. So this is one thing, a couple of things to tell the truth about, even if you make a fool of yourself, is free energy is definitely available. It's proven out at lots of levels, including physical experiments of De Palma, including the theoretical understanding that led to the MEG of Thomas Bearden. Other things I talk about is today so much going on with the health trips, the COVID, this thing. You have to dig into Dr. Wallach, Dr. Joel Wallach. He has a website, drjwallach.com. All of his books and are there, videos, CDs, or whatever. He started a company called Youngevity. It's just like it sounds, Youngevity.com. And he has a website. He has a daily radio show every weekday. You can call in and tell him, oh, this is what's wrong with me. And then he'll diagnose what's wrong, how you can help your condition by taking the right supplements, which he has developed. And by taking those, you'll ameliorate the condition. He's helped thousands of people over the years with this show to get healthy and overcome 5,000 diseases he's isolated that are due to mineral and vitamin deficiencies. He worked at the National Institute for Health under Marlon Perkins, brought him there to do research on zoo animals had died for supposedly natural causes. And he did over 10,000 autopsies on 450 species of animals, many of whom were, all of whom died of unknown causes. And every single one of them, he pegged the cause of was the death of premature death. Even human beings over 100 years old, the premature death was because of the deficiency in vitamins and minerals, especially minerals. He discovered all vertebrates need 60 minerals. Some of, as a chemist, I was blown away to know some of the elements that our metabolism requires. We have to have a minute amount of arsenic to prevent brain cancer, so forth and so on. There are so many diseases that can be prevented and cured by taking out proper minerals and vitamin supplements. You can go to his website for his radio show and listen to the videos. The videos he talks about is called Somebody Needs to Go to Jail. All the malfeasance of the medical community, the AMA, to suppress this information about health. He calls them all criminals, and they are. And he has documented a couple hours of stories say why these people like Fauci should go to jail. And you have to look to the radio show website. It's the radio show is called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. The website address is DDL. Dead Doctors Don't Lie. DDL. So three D's and an L, and then radio.com. And you'll find his lectures and a way to get to, if you need to call in to talk to the doctor directly, he takes calls every day. People have this condition and that condition. My friend Yamato has in the house. His sister has been a dialysis for longer since before 2013 when I was there last talking about this. He doesn't believe me. She doesn't believe me. She's still on dialysis. And Dr. Wallach has said over and over how quickly he gets people off dialysis with taking the right supplements. But I can't get through. I'm flabbergasted. I'm usually the best salesman ever, but I can't get to first base because I'm talking about something to fix people's health. My friend Jonathan Damien and Jai Damien in Australia just reported he had a stroke. But people don't read. I send stuff to don't look. I told them to double up in the essential fatty acids, omega 3, 6, and 9 to heal and prevent strokes because I have that experience personally. So, but I don't know. He respects me enough to listen. I don't know. I finally got my wife to take these vitamins, but she doesn't want to talk about it any to help her family. She's a prejudice against me being a salesman, quote unquote. Okay, so that's the information about Dr. Wallach. If you talk about that, you won't be considered a fool, but you'll be questioned if it's real, and it's real, and you can document all over the place. I have a longevity distributorship, which I paid $29 or something a year for a website, and all I do is buy my products wholesale for 30% off, and anybody can go to my website and sign up for free and get 30% off, or they can sign up to be an associate, and they can learn all this stuff and go out and tell people and help people with their health. And if they buy, it's a network marketing thing, so the more people buy, a little bit of money adds up, kind of thing. But it's so hard to get through to people. I gave up. I said I spent several thousand dollars on promotional material. I've always been successful in sales, but this has stubbed me because people don't want to hear it. People are sensitive about their diet and all that stuff. So, but another very important thing, Dr. Wallach says, all viruses, our body eats them up. The immune system is centered in the blood marrow. out, all the antibodies and all that, as long as your immune system is healthy, it's going to gobble up any viruses and keep you healthy. But your immune system is compromised if you don't have the nutrition, especially the minerals, and especially if you do things that screw up your health. He's big on gluten is a big problem because gluten in wheat, rye, barley, and oats is inflammatory to the digestion. It causes the villi, there's little tiny fingers in the intestines, to swell up, and then they can't absorb nutrition because the villi swell. He says it's kind of like putting a poison ivy in your digestion tract, the effect of the gluten metabolites. So the serious way is to completely avoid all wheat, rye, barley, and oats products. Oats have something that worse than gluten, that's precursor, but changes to gluten. So dig into Dr. Wellick. Watch some videos. He's on YouTube. If you want to improve your health and your family's health, that's what I would suggest. So I've gone on about an hour. I covered a few things about the vision for the TV show. So if you imagine, if the TV show of the Peace Walk features this information, so all it's promoting the end of nuclear power and the free energy and how it works and actual devices, good health and nutrition. These are products and concepts to promote for everyone's benefit that can be done as a part of this Peace Pilgrimage TV show. So this is a lot of uncomfortable information. I would like to postpone. I would like to not know it. I would like to imagine that it's not real. But in keeping with the to tell the truth and have the courage, even if you think makes me a fool, I just want to stay for the record, and I'll leave it at that. I've done a lot of research over many of the recent years on the obstacles that are preventing world peace, because I have the hunch if the government gets out of the way, peace will happen. Not just a hunch, but there's powers that are actively preventing peace, like the COINTELPRO operation with the FBI over many, many years, actively getting involved in social issues to prevent social progress, to kill Martin Luther King, to falsify the evidence in which Leonard Peltier is still in jail for 46 years and won't let him out because it's a symbol of the oppression of the Native people. And if they let him out, he's going to become a major spokesman and leader for the American peace movement and deliver a lot of good stuff, be a symbol of the Americans changing their mind. That's the deal, I'm hoping. So, but I'm aware of what's called adrenochrome, the people that drink the blood of children, that they're terrorized to get a high. I'm aware of the sexual abuse of women in all kinds of levels, their satanic ritual abuse and all that kind of stuff that's behind the what's called the deep state. Not directly, it's perversive pervasion all throughout society, secret societies, Republican, Democrat, whatever, doesn't matter. All a certain small percentage are completely messed up with what Guruji calls trivial religious beliefs, and make like you throughout antiquity until modern times, human sacrifices ritualized as a secret thing that gives people power. You look up the, you Google it, Catholic child sacrifice, and see what turns up. It's not, it's so ugly, people don't want to look at it, problem, let alone how to figure out how to solve it. I say the way to solve it, I don't know the way to solve it, but I know we have to solve it by forgiveness and reconciliation. Otherwise, it'll never be solved because, like, just like a rat, if you corner a rat, he'll fight to the death and bite you. If you give him a way out, he can take the way out and you can catch him in a paper bag or something. But the concept, don't corner the rat, it applies to this diabolical thing that we're up against. We have to give them a way out. Otherwise, it's going to continue. Trump wants to hang them all. Well, maybe they deserve it, but people are so terrible what their crimes are. Maybe they deserve it. But that might not solve the problem. How to change the mind of the people is the problem. Wars are fought to change people's minds. My mission is to change people's minds, to bring their minds into harmony with this natural law, this inviolably sovereign natural law, where the oneness of all life and the hurt of one is the hurt of many becomes apparent to people, and they change their way of thinking automatically by this new knowledge. It's like the analogy I would use is the North Pole, right? We navigate in life by how would the direction of the North Pole. What if a person didn't know there was a difference between the magnetic North Pole and the real North Pole, and they're sailing on the ship and trying to figure out where they're going to go? If they don't, they're going to be messed up. As soon as somebody teaches them how it works, it's called a declination. You have to adjust your compasses a certain number of degrees depending on where you are on the earth to figure out exactly where you're going. Somebody explains, oh, you're operating thinking that true north is magnetic north, and so that's why you're all messed up. So what we need to do is put an analogy like that, and where the make it as simple as, okay, your religious beliefs are all fucked up. You believe in drinking human blood to get high or whatever, and child sacrifice and is a way to blackmail everybody to get your way about these things. This is a trivial religious belief. No shame in changing it. It's just like somebody tells you how to adjust for magnetic north, and then you go straight and you become good. I don't know how to do that, but I think this only way we're going to solve the problems of the world is to give the rats a way out. So I don't want to believe it. I'm putting on the record, I'm aware of all that nonsense, those terrible things, and I'm not naive about it. I don't want to make a big deal of it to scare everybody, because getting scared is an objective, because it confuses the mind and you can't think straight. So that's why they're getting away with what they're doing, being able to lie repeatedly and consistently in the news media about what's happening, okay. So I want to switch to a more positive thing, because I noticed today is my mother's birthday, and she would be 99 if she was alive today. She lived till in her 90s. I'm looking at, I think she, 5 years ago something was when she died. Her name was Amy. The name means beloved, as is my father's name, David, means beloved. So I was raised by, my name is David. My great-grandfather's name is David. So I was raised by two parents whose name means beloved, and that's my meaning of my name. And I was the oldest child. I was well beloved by my parents. I had every advantage in life as a privileged, you call it maybe, person, middle class, went to school, got a veteran scholarship, went for my dad's war service where he was this disabled veteran. Using that, I went to college. I got a degree in chemistry and honors, pretty much straight A's in chemistry. I told this story last time about the realization I came into my advanced graduate class on chemical physics about science, how science denies the absolute nature of truth and believes in the fantasy of relative truth and probabilities thing is true, and following on extrapolating on Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. That's why everything in science is screwed up, because they can't come to grips with the certainty of truth. That's why my tetron theory is about how the certainty of natural law, the inviolably sovereign natural law, is defined by the nature, the overlooked nature of light, because they consider the square of C to mean the square of the speed of light, instead of the square of the velocity of light oriented relative to the observer. So I want to share that my mother was a very special influence on my life. I went to college. I lived home too, and she was a very intelligent woman who I could talk to about anything as a child. What questions? She was my mentor, my early mentor. I got along famous with her. She was my biggest supporter, and in the early years, I explained I have this theory and have to go research and do the peace movement. She supported me. She convinced my father at one point to put up the money for me to lease me a van so I could go on these Westphalia van when I went on the peace adventures, and from the 1982 to 1984. My biggest disappointment in my life is my mother died in a rest home of the motion picture industry, and I tried, but I was not successful in my peace movement efforts and my ability to get my Tetron theory accepted. And she died thinking that I couldn't succeed or didn't succeed. And she died a miserable death, because part of it was because her youngest son, my brother, made her convinced she shouldn't think of Sai Baba, and he's a Jehovah's Witness, and he thinks that Sai Baba is the devil. And so my mom was pressured out of her faith in God and the miracles of Sai Baba. And she told me in her later years that how sad she was. She couldn't connect with it anymore. And the most hurtful thing was because once she had Parkinson's disease. My father died from Alzheimer's disease, which I learned from Dr. Wallach. Both of those are conditions due to cholesterol deficiency, because cholesterol is all our nerves insulations are made of is cholesterol, the starting material. So my dad's brain withered away because my mom believed the doctors to not have cholesterol. The same thing what happened to her, Parkinson's disease, she wouldn't have cholesterol. So she went that way. And she started her mind to go. She cried to me, What have I done bad to you put me in this rest home? It was a beautiful place. I took away care of her, good care of her, but they, you know, try to prolong her life. That's their job. But she was miserable, but she was lovely, amazing person all of my life until that time, my brother put her in a rest home and wouldn't let me take care of her anymore because I wasn't trustworthy. they said. So that's some of my disappointment, but I wanted to focus on what with my mom. One of the things I learned is exactly one of the things you better not talk about are people or think you're a fool or nuts. And it has to do with the evaluation of personalities by handwriting analysis on an empirical system based on thousands of samples that's taught by the International Graphone Analysis Society. My mom, when I was a teenager, she studied this, all these correspondence things, and she's real intelligent, and she studied this material, and she would tell me, oh, I understand why a certain aunt always tells fibs. She all tells lies. She figured out what the fear and the motivation, why people were behaving from the handwriting. So she gave me little tidbits of this when I was a teenager, but I didn't dig into it until I was in business and had a sales manager's job for an investment company at the Van Nuys Airport. I was at five salespeople, and we were selling real estate investments. And a guy that I knew from a previous business association a few years before, Alex, he had learned this graphical analysis. He had taken the course and sent all every way. The way it works is they send you a booklet, you learn it, and you write the answers, and they send it back, and they check it off, and they send you the next batch of things to study. It's a correspondence course. He had taken the whole thing, and I think he took more than the whole thing. There's a lot of books involved available. So he shows up, and I am already familiar with this from my mother's, so I didn't have to overcome any prejudice. I was open to learning. So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you to teach my salesman courses, short courses, to how to understand their personality to better be a salesman, you know, that kind of thing. So he did. He made a course, and we had some sessions to go over things and personality breakdown by handwriting, and I paid him extra money to do a comprehensive analysis on my wife's handwriting and on my handwriting. And then what I found out blew my mind. That business activity faded out, but my relationship with my wife was severely impacted by what I learned. First of all, you can go to a website called IGAS, International Graphical Analysis Society, IGAS.com, and you can learn all about it and see the books and all that. But it's an empirical system based on thousands and thousands of handwriting, and it's about how the strokes in your handwriting vary because of your personality from what you're taught. So if you're taught to write straight up and down, and your writing leans to the right more, That means you're more emotionally responsive. If your small letter D is you're taught to make a small letter D without a loop in the upper part, and you see the loop forms, that's a trait called sensitivity to criticism, imagined criticism. So if you see somebody with a loop and a small D, beware, they're sensitive to imagined criticism. That's one of the most powerful traits to screw people up and make it hard to relate to one another. Because if one person doesn't have that trait and another person does, there's going to be a hard way to understand each other. That this is a particular trait I was talking about my son, because he has tall, small letter D, his height. If the height is over times the mundane letters, it means a lot of pride. Maybe if it's too tall, over three, it's called vanity. That's me means conforming to ethics and values, as opposed to independent mindedness, which is a person with short D, small D. That's independent mindedness. My mom was independent mindedness, and my dad was a lot of pride. So I got from both sides. My wife is very independent-minded, and my son, it turns out, I just learned, his lot of pride and values. And what it means is a person whose independent-mindedness, they don't think in terms of right and wrong. They think in terms of what I want and what I don't want. The person has tall D's and T's. They have pride, means they have a criteria of ethics and values by which they decide what to do. So that criteria may be different. One person's criteria of what's right and wrong may be totally messed up. One person's ideas what right and wrong may be more agreeable to the average person. But the idea is that they judge and determine what they're going to do by a criteria of ethics and values. So my son has pride in that, and also has the bit of the sensitivity to criticism. This is one trait you can get a handle on really well, because when you become aware of it and you pay attention to your handwriting changes, your personality changes. So when your stress level goes away and sensitivity to criticism goes away, you can see it in her handwriting. Like an example I use, I was doing a ceremony at UCSB one time, and I had a big altar set up and all stuff, and I was there early, of course, and I was still supposed to start at the hour when the bell rang at the Stork Tower, right? So I'm getting ready, and I know I'm relaxed and everything. I'm writing in some kind of notes in the notebook. And as I'm writing, the bell rang, turned out to be the five-minute warning bell, not the hour bell, but I was aware when I wrote that letter. I happened to be writing a small letter D, and for years I noticed I didn't have that sensitivity to criticism popping up on my writing. But at that moment when the bell rang, I could feel an anxiety like, oh, am I ready? Is it the bell? What, you know, the kind of anxiousness, am I late kind of thing. And sure enough, as I'm writing that letter D, a big loop and the D stem popped up as indicator of sensitivity to criticism. It's like exactly mirrors your thoughts of the moment, what strokes in your handwriting are. So from that, I knew the feeling with sensitivity to criticism. I didn't know the feeling before, but I knew it then from that experience, unique experience, say, of that moment. So I'm suggesting the I don't get to look at the people's handwritings when I meet them. Obviously, I just deal with the people as they are. But I would like to develop more in the peace movement a working relationship with some people where I can see their handwriting and they can see mine, and we can talk about it at a deep level to understand one another of how to get along better, how to work better together, how to succeed, all kinds of stuff. Because what you can tell from people's handwriting, first of all, is you can see if a person has certain talents, abilities, like visualization, people who can visualize things in three dimensions, have a lower loop in the Y's and G's is a big loop, means you have the ability to imagine things that exist in three dimensions. My wife's that way. She's got a eye. She can see, has an eye for things. She can remember faces. She can close her eyes and visualize where she is, what that's called a practical imagination. And she's real strong on it. Upper loop is L's and H's is abstract imagination, the ability to image concepts and ideas that don't exist in three dimensions. So big upper loops mean concept, people understand concepts. Really easy means a lot of math people, like music people, are like that. And another thing is emotional objectivity. So you can see people who have psychic abilities have certain traits in common, like Uri Geller, the guy that bends the spoons of his mind. If you look at his handwriting, you can tell what it's about. He has emotional objectivity, control of emotions. His imagination, ability to image is strong, certain things. Sai Baba, the same way. His handwriting follows exactly the criteria for somebody whose psychic ability, even though he's got one oddball thing that I can't figure out, which is his willpower is focused strongly in the future. And it's almost like how he does what he does, how he did what he did, has to do with manifesting the future now kind of thing. I don't know how to explain it, but other than that, he's emotional objectivity and the loops for abstract and practical imagination. So there's a lot of things you can tell from handwriting of people's abilities and intuition is another thing. People typically rely on two kinds of reason and intuition. Intuition is defined as the ability to attain knowledge without rational thought, and a reason is putting together, and it shows up in handwriting with the number of breaks between the letters and the word. So people who don't have any breaks between the letters and the words that you write in handwriting are people who tend to rely almost exclusively on reason. But people with a lot of breaks, like my wife and I and my son, I found out, my brother, have a lot of breaks, means that real heavy reliance on intuition. Intuition may be right or wrong, but the ability to attain knowledge without rational thought. Then you have to correlate what if it's right, but different methods. There's three thinking patterns: analytical, cumulative, logical, and comprehension. It shows up in the small letters M's, N's, H's, and R's. The pointier the strokes for the M's, N's, H's, and R's, the pointier the stroke, the more comprehension that people have. Means the ability to quickly grasp something, comprehend. The people have M's, N's, H's, and R's, the people who have strokes, which is a V at the bottom, that's analytical thinking, the ability to compare and contrast. Some people have a mix of it. Most people have a mix. Some people, my dad was very cumulative, logical. That's the third one. If you see someone who writes M's, N's, H's, and R's, and there's no V at the bottom, and all roundy, that means the person a very cumulative, logical thinker. My friend Bob Mendelsohn is like that. I got to see his handwriting. Very cumulative, logical. He's the one that developed something called God's Peace Plan. You look it up, God's without the apostrophe, godspeaceplan.org. He's correlated all kinds of prophecies, from indigenous prophecies in his books, particularly all the teachings that relate to prophecies in Judaism and Islam and Christianity. He's come up with an analysis what kind of peace plan would be acceptable to make peace in the Middle East based on the scriptural understanding. He's put this God's peace plan together. So I don't know if it'll fly, if the people in the Middle East will accept it, but I know he has put enormous amount of work in his mind, a very logical mind, very logical mind. So it's worth looking at. That's all I'm saying. So that's the three: prehension, analytical, and cumulative logical. So I can want to mention about something about President Trump here, because I was somebody who, when he was elected, when he was running, I didn't think much, the normal stuff you hear, but I had a worry about him being a businessman and all the publicity. As soon as he was a darling of the industry until he rolled down the escalator and announced his run for the president, and all of a sudden it was a switch turned. Every media was against him. Every article was slamming him. Everyone was against Trump. Well, I'm the kind of guy who roots for the underdog. When everybody's criticizing somebody, I want to look and see with the reality, right? So I'm not so politically minded anyway, but I was observing this. And when he won, I was glad only because I was keen and that Hillary didn't get elected, because I think she's a monstrous war criminal. But so I was happy Trump beat Hillary. That's the bottom line when he was elected. Then gradually I worked through this stuff. People saying this and that. Oh, he's stupid. Well, I saw his handwriting. I know he's not stupid. His handwriting, if you look at Trump's signature, it's amazing. His signature is a lot of sharp and no breaks. Means his signature indicates he's almost completely reliant on reason. And his comprehension is off the charts, like 9 out of 10 from the peaks, the sharp peaks, all the pointy letters. And his analytical ability, which shows that the V is at the bottom, is pretty strong. So, but he has absolutely no cumulative logical thinking, because you cannot have both cumulative logical and analytical and comprehension, because the M's, N's, H's, and R's either roundy or they're pointy. That's two choices, thinking patterns. So the disadvantage from Trump's, in my mind, is he's so quick, so sharp, and he analyzes, compares and contrasts well. But he doesn't show cumulative logical thinking. The logic, slow it down, the logic may miss him. But if you look at his normal handwriting, not to signature, his normal handwriting is mostly printing. Well, that's much harder to evaluate, but it can mean, like my brother's, my second oldest brother, Brian, he prints a lot. He's very intuitive. He was a most psychic of all us kids doing dowsing, and that he developed remote learner taking off on the remote viewing that his teacher taught at Monroe Institute, and he and his wife took this stuff courses to develop his mind to learn how to remote view. He made a business called Remote Learner, which is a distance learning company based on a free computer program named Moodle. And you can go to Moodle.org and download a free program to run your server to deliver online courseware. And the people who built it are paid by royalties from the service companies that teach people how to use it, the host Moodle program and the servers. So he started a company to host Moodle on his servers and teach it and all that kind of stuff. And it's been, he and some partners created a company, made an agreement with a guy who developed the program for his PhD in Australia and brought him here and created this model, business model, where somebody can make money on a free computer program by selling support services to teach people how to use it and taking a part of the money, 10% what they charge, and paying it back to the company to develop the program more and more, put the resources in to make it better and better. So he created, to me, an historic first in the open source business model, which I worked with him until I retired, as selling this services for Moodle programming. Santa Barbara City College was one of my clients. The Google Legal Department was one of my clients. Bank of America, a bunch of school districts. I was the one who talked to them about how can you improve your Moodle service, what kind of hosting, what kind of plans we have, extra widgets you can buy to make it work better. I was the guy who handled it like an account executive to do that. So that's an example of led to, stimulated by my talking about my brother's handwriting. Can't go into too much details in the last 20 minutes, but this graphoanalysis is something to pay attention to. If you want to learn it, you can go to that website. You can sign up and buy books. You can sign up for the course. It takes a year or so, all the correspondence course. You get a certified graphoanalyst. But it's not for everybody. If your personality already isn't such that you can get your head around it, you're not going to be interested. My son, Micah, said the few things I talked to him about struck a bell because I pointed out a number of things from just a small handwriting sample about his personality that he identified with this right on target. We'll see. But the bottom line is I want to see handwriting for people I'm going to work closely with on this movie production to determine how to work together. You can tell things like who's a liar because of their defense mechanisms. They have habitual, unconscious deceit, self-deceit, or secrecy. You can tell stuff like that really quickly from looking at people's handwriting. You can tell who's outstanding. Like my friend Jai Damian, who I mentioned, I'm praying for his recovery from the stroke. He's the guy I went to Mexico with in 1975, and we got busted for a handful of pot and thrown in jail. And I took responsibility, and he got out in a few days, and I stayed there for 9 months in the penitentiary. But in Guadalajara, anyway, the reason I went with him, I saw his handwriting in Isla Vista in 1974 in the fall. So it would have been November. He had posted outside an herb store a Xerox copy of a flyer about healing gathering he had, was having in Ojai at Christmas time. And I was so taken by his handwriting, how sharp he was, how emotionally objective his imagination. I knew this guy had strong psychic traits from his handwriting and a bunch of the other things, so I wanted to meet him. So I decided to go to this so-called healing gathering just to meet this guy who wrote this paper. Well, I went to there, and it was a hippy-dippy gathering, but it was my first experience of something outside of my normal, like a rainbow gathering, but it was not called that. This guy was into harnessing the power of the mind through the circle to heal people, to facilitate their healing, emotional healing, physical healing, all that kind of stuff. So there was a few days gathering with the hot tubs, and if you not too cold, you could go naked and blah, blah, blah. But and all kinds of people came, weird people, regular people, camping out and listening to what he had said and circling up and going through the rituals he had from his experience, long experience in England, all kind of places, about orgone therapy and all kinds of stuff. You know, I didn't know anything about this stuff, but I went there to meet him and see how he behaved, what kind of guy it was. That was after my PhD from UCSB was application was declined, and I was heading off into a intuitive path to learn what I needed to learn to complete the fourth equation of my Tetron Natural Unified Field Theory, which I had completed in 1974 when I felt like the day I wrote these things, I felt like some kind of group of people was watching me from behind, from the rafters kind of thing, from the future. I had the eerie feeling I had when I wrote these. But after that thing, I palled around with him, and he invited me with my encouragement to go to a yoga retreat in Mexico. And on the way there, we got busted and didn't see much of each other after that a few times. in recent years, he's connected with me on the internet. He helped me get a computer together when I was living on the mountain a few years ago. He tried to help me a lot of ways. But he's in Australia, and he had a stroke, and it helps. He gets better. And that, again, was a hand-raising thing that led me to him. So you don't typically these days get to see people's hand-raising because they type on the internet, use other means. But I'm going to try to make a practice of, I want to really understand somebody how to get the good relationship. I want to see a few pages of their handwriting, and they can scan it and email it to me or whatever. The only thing a scan will do is tell the pressure, and when you're the pressure of the handwriting determines the depth of emotion. The angle of the strokes, angle of the upstrokes, tells the emotional responsiveness, how responsive they are, sympathetic or objective, or in some cases, a reverse slant means withdrawn emotionally. My first wife, Betty, was really withdrawn emotionally. I'm very responsive emotionally. So to me, she seemed very poised, kind of almost stoic. She had an emotional withdrawal personality, and I respected that. I met her when she was studying chemistry as a home ec major, and I was her tutor. And after a few sessions of being her chemistry tutor, I helped her get her thinking in order to be able to think like a chemist, so we didn't need a tutor anymore. But I started to date her, and eventually with a lot of stories in between, we married and had a son who's now a pilot, a captain with the United Airlines. I never see his three children because I didn't spend much time with him after we split up, and I want on my quest to create peace and everything. I was very close to him as a child, and that hurt him very badly. And so he doesn't want to talk to me for a long time now. But someday I hope it'll work out. If I'm ever seen as a respectable person because of my work, maybe he'll come around and I'll be friends with him. He'll understand my sacrifice. Same thing with the rest of my family. I'm talking about my family a little bit. I have two younger brothers, Victor, the Jehovah's Witness, and Brian, who started Remote Learner, have a deceased younger, 14 years younger brother, who was the one who took me to visit Sai Baba, was a Sai Baba devotee, and took me in India in 1976, the month of September, where we visited the ashram every day and sat through darshan twice a day to see him, and maybe offer a letter, maybe hopefully be invited to an interview, which we did on the last day, September 28th, which he had said earlier was the birthday of Shirdi Baba, previous incarnation. We had a meeting with Satya Sai Baba on September 28, 1996, and the story of my meeting is online at my website. My website is global, hyphenated words, globalemergencyalertresponse.net, and put a slash at the end, and you put India in small letters, India96.html. You'll see my story about my visit to Sai Baba. He materialized lots of things in our meeting, ashes, the vibhuti, rings, changed the size of ring before my eyes. He admonished me, gave me direct teachings in the interview, which are all described on that article, which also relates to the 1974 experience 2 years earlier when we introduced the Peace Pole for Jerusalem at the World Unity Festival, Spiritual Unity Festival, Drums Around the World, which people had organized for 3 years, and it had a fiasco at the end where we were camped at Big Mountain for almost a week and then suddenly moved to the site where we could set up on the 20th of August 1974, which turned out to be the day the buffalo calf, white buffalo, was born, in full apparent fulfillment of the Lakota prophecy from 19 generations ago as a sign of hope for these times. Now, that occurred coincidentally, the non-albino buffalo calf named Miracle was born the day we started the gathering, which was planned for 3 years to be a mutual prophecy fulfillment gathering inspired by Thomas Binyaka's message about the Hopi Life Plan prophecy. And he collaborated with the organizers. And the seventh day of that event, on August 27th, we introduced the Pole for Jerusalem into the circle, the ceremony area, where the 1980 Peace Pole we'd created at the White House with Guruji Fuji's blessing and Chief Krodog's blessing to create this Peace Pole. It's been to many, many gatherings, hundreds of thousands of people with the ceremony center, including many rainbow gatherings. That was in the center of the circle. What a final ceremony on August 28th, conducted by Chief Phil Lane, the pipe ceremony, which occurred at my feet. I don't know why, but at my feet, he had the pipe. I was wearing the red lab coat from my fire sign experience I talked about before, where I was praying for a sign whether I should dye a lab coat's red and go to the Hopi land and investigate the Hopi prophecy life plan. And at the moment, after I meditated, the forest fire broke up at the base, San Francisco Bay, and burned up toward me, and the red borate solution and came out of the planes, put the red borate solution on it. So that was my sign to dye the lab coats. My wife and I dyed them and went to the Hopi land, and that summer, bicentennial summer, 4th of July, the bicentennial day, we are knocking on Thomas Banyaka's door with my write-ups about what a weed sent into the Horizons Day Council with Barbara Mux Hubbard, the visions for the next century of the United States, my carving on a rock I found there, my first equations that I knew about, the Tetron equations. We showed up at the, both of us with a red lap because they're at Thomas's house on the bicentennial 4th of July and had an experience with Christian people and a man in a church where he spoke to us and explained about the return of Jesus Christ and what's coming and how that ties into the return of the true white brother, the hope you're talking about. Many, many interpretations of all this going on. But before we left, a lot of strange things happened. I've outlined before, and you can see my story about this documented at my website, Global Emergency Alert, Global Emergency Alert Response /history.html has my story, those few years, all the weird things that happened that led me to believe so strongly and help Thomas Banyaka to manifest this Hopi life plan prophecy for paradise on earth, open the door to the hosts of Banyaka to get the native people in to speak, which we did on December 10th, 1992. In the process with Yamato as my coordinator, liaison between Thomas Banyaka and Dalai Lama, get them together a bunch of times in ceremony and verify he's not the one holding the tablet they think they're looking for. So I'm drawing to close for this podcast because I only have 2 minutes left. So what to say? I've outlined some things that are I've tried to tell the truth about a lot of things I believe and have evidence to believe they're true. And I'm risking being called the fool. And I'm encouraging people to reach down and do the same thing between now and April 1st, especially to help bring peace to the earth and awaken the innate divinity within each human being to purify the minds of the people, to bring peace and harmony in the world. I pray, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Le Ilaha Illallah Torakum. The law arises, Torak, the great law of light, the inviolably sovereign law by which everything operates. Respect it for peace. Thank you very much. Love you all. The next podcast will be next week.